Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Around the world, the trip begins with a kiss. Roam if you want to, roam around the world. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you're having a wonderful time wherever you happen to be. Get out your maps, boys and girls. We've been traveling, but we have landed at 21 degrees, 28 minutes north, 157 degrees, 59 minutes west. We're coming to you from the island of Oahu in Hawaii, and in particular, the Ko'olina area and the Disney area known as Aulani. You bet you didn't know Disney was here. Well, they are. They just opened it up called the Aulani Resort. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. But in the meantime, we're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Lots of stuff to talk about in the news. Of course, it's Thanksgiving Day weekend. I certainly hope you're not with your relatives this weekend. You know why? That means you've overpaid. That's right. You've overpaid for your airline ticket. You've overpaid for everything else. Plus, you have to deal with what I call the obligatory dysfunctional family get-together known as Thanksgiving. I hope you're listening to the show from somewhere other than where they live and somewhere other than where you live. But if you are, well, remember, I didn't exactly not warn you not to travel over this weekend, the busiest travel time of the year. So you're on your own on that one, but we'll be solving all your other travel problems later in the show. It's also merger time again. I mean, just when you thought all the airlines have merged, whether it's United and Continental or Delta and Northwest and everybody else, think about this. 2 years ago, we had six major legacy hub carriers. Now we've got three. And if rumors are to be believed, American is in quiet talks with U.S. Air. Remember, U.S. Air is like the last remaining holdout of the smaller carriers. They only have about 8% of the market. American, which hasn't been able to turn a profit in any reasonable quarter that I can imagine, the only airline that hasn't declared bankruptcy, they're looking around. That's one. And then JetBlue, out of the blue, is thinking after going after Frontier. So at the end of the day, we may end up with one brand. And not good. As I've said before, we're going to end up not with brands at all. We're going to end up with alliances. We'll be flying either Oneworld or Star or Sky Team. Not that they're actually a team, but they like to call themselves a team. And you know what that's going to do to airfares, which means, again, airfares have gone up and up and up this year, as high as 18% just over this particular travel time. And when are they going to go down? Well, they're actually going to go down in about 2 days for about a week, because it's called the dead week. There are two dead weeks in the travel industry, the one that's immediately following Thanksgiving, otherwise known as the dysfunctional family get-together, and the one that's immediately following New Year's. Of course, the reason why they go down is because nobody's traveling in the week after Thanksgiving because they're recovering from that dysfunctional family get-together. And the same thing happens at New Year's when they're just recovering from New Year's. You're going to see a lot of continuing Black Friday deals from a couple of days ago and Cyber Monday deals all over the place. There are limited time offers to generate revenue when nobody's traveling. You'll see fares dropping as much as 43% across the board. Where they're really dropping is overseas. Let me give you an example. I was on the US Air Washington to New York shuttle the other day, a flight that takes all of 38 minutes. Of course, you're taxiing and waiting at the airport for an hour and 38 minutes. But for that particular shuttle flight, the airfare was $607 round trip for that little puddle jumper from Washington up to New York, round trip. The current airfare from Los Angeles to Istanbul is $580. So, where would you rather spend Turkey Day? Well, you're already stuck in Turkey Day, but if you had your choice between now and the end of the year, wouldn't you want to be in Turkey? Then stuck on the runway at Reagan wondering why you paid $607 for nothing? So, something to think about. Now, I love this particular story. This one takes the cake. You've heard of don't squeeze the Charmin? How about don't hide the Charmin? In Charlotte, North Carolina, he was staying at a, this one guy was staying at a motel in Charlotte, and guess what? There was a lack of toilet paper in his bathroom, and he got so upset that he went a little berserk, and he broke everything in the room. He just completely destroyed it. Over $2,000 in destruction. The carpet, I mean, he was bashing the ceiling. Broke the hairdryer, the lights. Came back an hour later and did even more damage. This man was desperate for toilet paper. Anyway, he was charged with vandalism, and hopefully they have toilet paper in his cell, because that's where he'd be spending at least a day or two figuring out what happens when they don't have enough toilet paper. Another interesting story which struck me is, you know, we've just acknowledged the 10th anniversary 2 months ago of September 11th. There are some in the travel industry that call it the actual lost decade in tourism and travel. That because of between 9/11 2001 and this past 9/11, some 500,000 jobs in travel and tourism were lost, mostly to do to rules and regulations, bureaucracy. Listen to this: more Chinese now visit France than come to the United States. Why? Because it's so hard to get a visa to the U.S. And while we as a country used to be the destination for 17% of the world's tourists in 2000, guess what? It's dropped down to 12.4% and shows no sign of getting better. We are now thought of around the world as inhospitable and unwelcoming. Forget the brain drain. How about the money drain? People just are cutting their spending, and they're not choosing to come here because they think it's just too difficult. And by the way, when was the last time you returned to an airport in this country to come back and clear customs? I remember in 1984, they built the Tom Bradley Terminal at LAX, the brand new international terminal. Now, there's no thinking here. Why? Because the earlier terminal at LAX had 8 gates. The Tom Bradley Terminal, the brand new multi-million dollar terminal, had 10. But wait, they insisted they were building it up because they wanted to get it ready for the 1984 Olympics. So they installed 70 different inspection stations for customs and border inspection agents so that it would streamline the process. One small problem: it's never been staffed by any more than 24 of them. So that's 46 stations that are completely empty. You go around the rest of this country, whether it's here in Honolulu or in Chicago or Atlanta or Dallas or, of course, JFK, major ports of entry in this country, and what do you see? Unmanned inspection stations and lines that are longer than the flight to Turkey. And you want to come to, and that's for citizens. The guys who are foreigners basically are standing in line reading copies of War and Peace, and they're finishing the book. That should tell you what's going on. So we need to do something, first of all, because it's bad for our image, and not to mention it's really, really bad for our pocketbook. Things you need to know about. Anyway, when we come back, because we're coming up on another anniversary, I know it's interesting, the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And we'll be back with the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet to talk about that and what it means when Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns from the Aulani Resort, the Disney Resort in Oahu. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Aulani Resort on the island of Oahu. Run by Disney, by the way. A surprise when you think about the fact that Disney's never been over here before, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We'll talk about those emails a little bit later, too. And as I do every week at this time of the show, I encourage you to go to our website with the most imaginative name possible, petergreenberg.com. to check out our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work in Japan, in Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, and in Christchurch, New Zealand. All of those locations, victims of either earthquakes and or tsunamis in the last almost 2 years. Keep in mind, the rebuilding effort in Haiti will take at least another 8 years. And there are so many opportunities when you check out that list where you can become involved up close and personally in crafting your own volunteer vacation. And those of you who listen who have kids over the age of 8, many of these programs allow you to take your kids with you. It's a life-changing experience, and what you get back is so much more than what you give. It's an amazing experience that you should not deny yourself. And if you do go, let us know. We'll put you on the air from wherever you are because we want to hear what you're doing and how other people can do the same as you. As I said before the break, we're coming up on another anniversary in about 10 days. Hard to believe, it's the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. Most of us only remember, of course, September 11th, 2001, which of course was our generation's Pearl Harbor. But it's something that's never forgotten here in Hawaii and throughout the armed forces. And joining me now, we're honored to have with us the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, Admiral Patrick Walsh. Admiral, thanks for coming on the show.
Peter, thank you for having me. Thanks for the opportunity to spend time with your listeners.
You know, Pearl Harbor, as opposed to being just a tourist destination, is a repository of so much history. People forget that on December 7th, 1941, more than 2,000 people were killed, 1,000 wounded. It was probably the most devastating attack on our soil ever in terms of a foreign country invading.
Absolutely. And this year is the 70th anniversary, as you pointed out. And we'll work with the Park Service to provide a theme that really will be a way to remember. This year's theme is the Enduring Legacy, and it's going to focus on the meaning and the remembrance of Pearl Harbor to the nation and to the world. And I think the point you're making is one that I just want to reinforce, that this is something that we just simply can't take for granted. We value the sacrifice, and the way we value the sacrifice is we take time to remember. We learn from the heroism, from the bravery, from the example, and it helps us inform the future. It helps us inform the way we look at the world, and we're constantly reminded here at Pearl Harbor as to the importance and the impact of this event.
Admiral, let me ask you on a personal note, because you're a Navy veteran, you commanded a squadron, you're on the carrier wing, but when was the first time you actually saw Pearl Harbor yourself? When you sailed in, or did you come as a tourist first?
No, I came in with the Navy. And so I started my career on the West Coast and came back and forth between the West Coast, working the Pacific and the Atlantic over the course of my career. So early in my career, I had a chance to really work the issues, and then didn't spend a lot of time at Pearl Harbor until later in my career when I had command of the Stennis Strike Group out of San Diego. And we came through Pearl Harbor for a Rim of the Pacific exercise, which attracted countries from all around the region to spend time in Pearl Harbor for about a 30-40-day exercise.
And that was the time you really got a chance to be up close and personal.
Up close and personal, and to spend time here in a meaningful sort of way. I had come through as part of the Blue Angels in the 80s and spent time at Waikiki, Kaneohe Bay, and at Barbers Point with the air shows that we flew. At the time, people remember the traffic jam more than anything else, as I'm told today. but in terms of actually spending time and immersing myself not only in the history of the event, but also in the legacy, in the shoes left behind by Chester Nimitz. I mean, it's really been the past few years, and this is one of those historical events, and Nimitz is one of those historical figures that the more you spend time with them, the more you're attracted to them.
And if you're a student of history, not just Pearl Harbor, but of course a little bit further west in here, the Battle of Midway, probably the most decisive naval battle in the history of the world.
Exactly. And, you know, we commemorate the anniversary of the Battle of Midway every June 4th. And most recently, when I was on the mainland to commemorate the event, we had survivors from the Japanese side, aviators who actually went swimming that day, that were in my headquarters looking at charts and maps in my office trying to figure out where their ships were sunk.
Oh my goodness.
So this is something really remarkable for your listeners, because at once it's a reminder of the past and the mistakes that were made and the animosities that existed. But at the same time, it's transformational in terms of now being a place of solace and repose and healing, and an opportunity really to work closely with families of Japanese counterparts. As you described in your opening segment here, we spent time in Japan following the disaster of the earthquake and the tsunami. And we now have a relationship with our Japanese counterparts that was just not possible to consider back many, many years ago. Today, we're at a place that I think I give great credit to those who were our predecessors for what they've allowed us to inherit, which is a relationship that's based on stability and security and respect. And it's one that I think has an unlimited future.
Admiral, you know, you mentioned two things. We were actually lucky enough. We've actually done this show live from Midway Island. Not the easiest show to produce, but what an amazing place to see what the Navy left there. And, of course, all the history that the Navy had when it was there that's still being preserved there, not to mention all the Goonie birds. I'm sure you know about those.
I do.
And as a pilot, I'm sure you love those.
It's a see and avoid sort of problem for a pilot.
Yes. And believe it or not, we've done our radio show from the Stennis. We did it in San Diego. That was amazing. I actually think what you should really do is try to figure out if you can get an NFL game to be played on the deck of the Stennis. I think you could actually pull it off.
Well, why don't we just start with a basketball game and see if that works?
Okay. What's the, in all seriousness, when people come to Pearl Harbor for the first time, what's the biggest surprise for them that is their gee whiz moment that they weren't prepared for?
Well, I think you'll probably get a number of different reactions. I'll offer mine. To begin with, the Pearl Harbor Visitor Center has gone through an extraordinary makeover. And today, this is a place that is really worthy of a destination and time for families, because now the exhibits are such that you can walk through a very quiet, idyllic, peaceful setting and yet immerse yourself in the environment of the day. So the exhibits will take you back to life in the 40s, both in Honolulu, Hawaii, as well as in Japan, and give you a sense of what culture, of what society and the makeup was like at the time. So that is noteworthy. The other thing that is another gee whiz moment is that all of the history now opens the doors for all kinds of fora for education. So what you'll find here is you'll find Missouri is here, and that in and of itself is worthy of a family destination. The Naval Aviation Museum on Ford Island, which is right across from where Missouri is birthed, is another worthwhile location. Bofin is there next to the Pearl Harbor Visitor Center. So you have a confluence of very, very important historical memorabilia as well as memories that are embraced in all of these locations and investments, really, the Park Service and many of the service groups have made over time, and it's remarkable. When you visit Arizona, you will see 1,177 names etched in marble. To be there at sunrise or sunset, as we often are, to be there and just embrace the quiet and the solitude that goes with that is a very powerful moment for anyone who's visiting. The other thing that I would draw attention to is in the lower left corner of the vestibule, where you will find more names etched in marble. You will see another list of names, but with dates that are far more current. These are people who survived the attack on Pearl Harbor and wanted their remains encased with their shipmates. That meant they had lives. That meant they had income. That meant they had residence.
Admiral, if I can ask you to hold 1 second, because we're going to take a quick break. If you just stay with us,
sure.
1 second, we'll come right back to you. Admiral Patrick Walsh, the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, right here in Pearl Harbor.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
Welcome back at 33 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg with you here from the Aulani Disney Hawaii Resort in Oahu, coming up on the 70th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. We've been speaking to Admiral Patrick Walsh, the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. And Admiral, when we went right to the break, you were talking about the additional names etched in marble. Could you explain that again?
Yes. Many of the survivors today come home to Pearl Harbor, and they choose our waters. They choose the waters around the Arizona as their final resting place. These are the they've asked for their remains to be cremated and then placed inside the Arizona. And yet, you ask, after a life full of family and neighborhoods and other sorts of forms of profession, that after this very long life, they would want their final resting place to be back on Arizona, you know, the place of this fateful battle that lasted about 2 hours. It says something about us. It says something about our culture. It says something about the memories that the searing memories that are etched inside these remarkable people who were part of the Pearl Harbor event some 70 years ago.
Exactly. Now, Commander, just switching gears for a second, I just called you Commander. Did you hear that? I should have said Admiral. I said you commanded the gunslingers in Squadron 105. So the question I have for you, Admiral, is how often do you get back up in the air?
I haven't flown in a tactical jet in a long time, and it's because, first of all, everyone knows better. The first thing that goes are the eyesight and then the hearing. So,
what'd you say?
My jobs and my responsibilities really have me more involved in leading and managing the fleet from this perspective, which as much as I would enjoy flying, it's really not beneficial to the fleet for me to be doing that. I need to be focused on other things.
Well, Admiral, I should tell you, I've been very lucky in my career. I produced a movie a number of years ago called Red Flag, and I got a chance to fly the 4, the 5, the 15, and the 16 out of Nellis Air Force Base. But you had a lot of Navy pilots there participating in Red Flag as well at that point. And I have to tell you, when you get permission for a vertical takeoff, there's nothing like it in the world.
That's true. And I did it in my day, but I don't do it now.
But I'll tell you an interesting story. We had one of our planes in the sky, and the commander of the plane was a guy named Buster Glosson, who ended up commanding TAC later on. And they had a total hydraulic failure in the F-4. And here we were on the ground, and they were using live ordnance for our show. And they had to drop all the live ordnance, and then we did a barrier carrier landing on the ground because the F-4 was a carrier plane. It had the hook.
Yeah. I think we ought to have more of those.
We need them in commercial airlines, I think, by the way. Bottom line, though, I do have a favor to ask of you. I hope you won't be too offended by this, but everybody asks me when I travel all over the world, what's the one thing I've never done that I've always wanted to do? And everybody gets it wrong. There's only one thing I want to do, and I need your help. Are you ready?
I think I know where this is going, but go ahead, Peter.
Well, I've had a chance to fly, you know, in the jets. I've had a chance to go on an attack nuclear sub on a classified mission. Those are all great moments in my life. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But the one thing I want to do, oh, by the way, you can't put me on a roller coaster. No way, because I'm not in control. You can't pay me to go on a roller coaster. But the one thing I've always wanted to do, it's three words, Admiral, night carrier landing. What do you think?
You want to start with a daytime first?
Sure. I'll fly backseat. You just set it up. I'm there.
Okay.
You're laughing at me. You're laughing.
No, I'm not laughing at you. Why don't we take that one offline, and I'm happy to talk to you about it.
You know what? We will. I there you go. You didn't expect that one today. I apologize.
Okay,
let's get back seriously for a second. Although that was pretty serious on my part. I really want to do it. But in all seriousness, as we approach this 70th anniversary, so many people come to Hawaii who don't get out to Pearl Harbor. They never leave their hotels. They never leave their resorts. How long are you open every day? How easy is it to get there? And is there a better time of the week for people to go?
Well, I think the Park Service might be a good source here for being able to answer some of the specifics. Let me just say, if you come to Hawaii and you don't see Pearl Harbor, you're really missing out on something here that reveals a lot about us as a country, as a people, as a culture. And I think one sort of phrase to take away from this conversation would be that, you know, so went the events at Pearl Harbor, so went the course of the nation. And as Pearl Harbor was able to right itself and repair all but three of the ships that were damaged during the attack, so was the course of the nation. And we turned the tide of the war, I think, largely based on the work that was done here. Certainly this led to the Battle of Midway. The ships that participated at Pearl Harbor were part of the force that participated in the Battle of Midway. And I think
exactly.
For families who are coming to the island, they need to find time to come out here. There's all kinds of tours that are available. The visitor center is open, I think, during daylight hours and 7 days a week from everything that I can tell.
Well, Admiral Patrick Wallace, the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for helping us commemorate the 70th anniversary. Amazing, 70 years of Pearl Harbor. We really appreciate that. When we come back, more from the Disney Resort, which seems to be still under construction, from Oahu. Back right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Aulani Disney Hawaii Resort in Oahu. Hard to believe the name Disney in Hawaii, but they're here. And what's amazing about this place, to me at least, is that, and I say this as a compliment to Disney, I'm not being assaulted by Disney. I'm actually being given a very nice dose of Hawaiian culture, in which Disney is actually admitting up front that they're visiting too, and which is really kind of refreshing when you consider what most people expect these days when a branded company shows up. And joining me now is somebody who knows a little bit about that. He's one of those magical, crazy guys. Does that describe you?
That's fair.
Okay. Fair. It's describing you. He's one of the great Walt Disney Imagineers who basically lived here, breathed here, developed here, designed here, and turned this place into what it is now. And his name is Joe Rohde. How are you, man?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
You know, when we were talking off mic and walking around and touring the property, the first thing I said to you was, where's Mickey? And you said,
well, you know, people are coming to Hawaii for Hawaii, and our job is to give them Hawaii. So the first thing we wanted to make sure we did is not to put ourselves between our guests and what they came for. Our characters are here. Children do expect to see them, but they're here as tourists, the way we are, visitors. So we don't want to place ourselves as interpreters of Hawaiian culture. We have Hawaiians.
Was that a decision you made from day one?
Absolutely, yes.
And what, I mean, normally, I wouldn't expect a company to make that decision because, you know, well, we're Disney and we're going to brand everything, you know. Or like, I remember when Delta Airlines took over Pan Am, the first thing they did was they got rid of the word Pan Am, and then nobody flew Delta because they didn't understand what that was, right? They tried to impose their culture.
Well, of course, and this is a place where that's been done many, many times. But as a storytelling company, our first interest is in the story itself. This is a story.
And Hawaii is a storytelling culture.
Exactly. This is a story that existed before we got here. So our job is different here. We're not the creators of this story. We're actually offering ourselves up as the channel for the story. When you come here, the stories you encounter are Hawaiian stories. The voices you encounter are Hawaiian voices. But it is our technical abilities that bring that to life here.
Now, here we are in Kohalina. I remember when they first opened the first resort here, which is next door, by the way. I stayed there before it even became a Marriott, right? There wasn't a whole lot out here. You drove here on the way to the outlet malls. you know, and then you'd come back. Why this location?
Well, this is actually both culturally a very important part of the coast. It has a deep ancient history. Right where we are is where the great kings of Oahu came to refresh themselves and relax. The weather on this part of the island is great because the rain shadow keeps it from being too rainy over here. So it's beautiful weather. You look right out at the sunset, which will set right off the ocean where we're looking right now. There's a lot of assets here. When you come to this part of Oahu, it's as if you're on another whole island. It's wide open space, big mountains, open country, quite beautiful.
Okay, so you know what you were trying to design from a cultural perspective. What about from a physical perspective?
Well, physically, we had to ask ourselves a whole bunch of questions. And those questions were questions we were asking of our Hawaiian guides, our Hawaiian helpers. Like, what is the feeling of a Hawaiian space? What is the meaning of a journey through space in a Hawaiian idea of that?
But before you could even start that conversation, I would presume you got a lot of pushback.
No, absolutely not. My presentation to Bob Iger was like 30 seconds
long.
I'm not
talking about the pushback from Bob Iger. I'm talking about pushback from the Hawaiians.
Oh, there is a moment when we have to sit down and be very clear what our intentions are. I grew up here. I think you mentioned that. And so I
didn't, but you just did.
Yeah. I have some awareness of when you start a relationship here, that relationship starts with you explaining who you are, why you're here, what are you bringing to the table.
Because from a point of background, before you ever got here, you were doing Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
A whole different approach.
Well, Animal Kingdom also involves a lot of cultural negotiation, a lot of research, a lot of reality. I think that's why it was such an easy slide to come over here to this. This took a lot of research, takes a lot of talking, a lot of collaboration. We had extraordinary positive support from the Hawaiian community as soon as they understood what it was we were trying to do.
You know, when I first went on a Disney cruise, I was having nightmares. I was convinced that I would be trapped on a ship for 24 hours a day singing "It's a Small World" after all. I mean, I really did. And then I got on the ship, and the only thing that drove me nuts was the horn. Na 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 na. Okay. Well, when we come back, let's find out what else is not expected here at the Aulani with Joe Rohde and Peter Greenberg from the 10th floor in what was used to be a construction zone about 15 seconds ago until people died. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Aulani Resort, a Disney resort here on Oahu. We've been talking with Joe Rohde, who has a big title of senior VP and blah, 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 but he's really one of the great Imagineers. And we were talking about what people come to this resort for, what they're expecting to see and what they don't see, and what they're not expecting to see and what they do see. So what are they expecting to see and they're not going to see?
Well, that's an interesting question. I do think people expect of the Disney company a certain kind of a look, a kind of an idealized look.
Yeah, because
right?
I have to tell you something. This doesn't strike me as Disney.
Well, but there is a way.
I think that was intentional on your part.
Well, it's a different story.
Yeah.
This is a story that is real. It's a story that is true. It's a story that happens here in this real place. And so our job then as storytellers is to do that, to make this place real, to attach it to the real values that underlie this land, so that when you take this journey to fly to Hawaii and you take the bus and you get to the place and you walk in, it finally feels like
you've never taken
somewhere.
A bus to this place.
Not to this place.
Thank you.
I have taken our buses to our places.
Okay, fine.
And my point is that you want to feel like
that's
you've
called
arrived.
Mears Transportation, and they're in Orlando, but we're not talking about that. Go ahead.
You want to feel like you got there, like this is the place. This is that place. And then, of course, it's fun. You know, the pool's great. The food's fabulous. It's fabulous, right? But fabulous actually doesn't last very long. You have to have more.
Let's start first thing about the food. Up until about 7 years ago, when you mentioned Disney and food, that was an oxymoron. Okay, but it's changed. Back in Orlando, you had one place that had a great restaurant at the Contemporary Resort, the California Grill. Turned me around completely. I couldn't believe it, right? Because when I thought of Disney, I thought of Jell-O and bad butterscotch pudding. You know, things got changed. You had to do the same thing with the food here.
Absolutely. The company actually is very dynamic in this way. We all really like these challenges. We like to engage. We like to change. We like to grow. This is a fabulous opportunity for us to step out into territory we've never been in before. Fabulous. Fantastic.
So, for example, if you go to one of the Disney properties, either in California or in Orlando, you can have the princess moments. You can have the do they still tuck you in? Do they still do that? In the hotels?
They must.
They must, right? Yeah. Do they do that here?
This is about being in Hawaii.
Okay.
And so when we had opportunities to make a moment, to make something happen, to use our skills as magicians, for the most part, those are done in the service of Hawaiian stories, Hawaiian ideas.
Hawaiian architecture.
Hawaiian art, tremendous art everywhere around here. And this, to reward that feeling that you went somewhere different than where you're from, someplace that could help you remember having done it, someplace that lets you change, and someplace that helps a family. Remember, a family's taking this journey together, right?
This is a family resort.
Oh, absolutely. It's really designed around everything you can imagine about making a successful dynamic for a family of many different types. So, you know, you want the family to come together and to experience these things together, and they need catalyst, stimulus. So a lot of what this is about is it's so curious, it's so interesting, it's so different. There's things to talk about. There's things for a parent to talk to a child about. There's things for a child to discover that a parent's totally unaware of, to take to a parent and talk about. So the actual family relationship is stimulated by being in a place like this.
And I have to tell everybody, so they know this coming in, there are no rides here.
No, it is not a theme park.
Right.
It is a resort, a place in Hawaii about being in Hawaii.
The one thing I found fascinating, we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the show, is you took me to a place today where Hawaiian language is spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
Yeah. Okay. So people come from all over the world to Hawaii. Every beach, every road, every mountain, every valley, every town, half the people named in Hawaiian. And that language can be a barrier to your experience of the real place. So we created a lounge, the Olelo Room. Olelo is the Hawaiian word, for language. It's a Hawaiian language lounge. By day, it's a little bit like a coffee lounge. And then in the evening, it's a bar lounge with music. And it's a place where you can come and sit and very cleverly, I think, decorated with all these objects with their Hawaiian names and Hawaiian pronunciation.
It's all spelled out. Yeah.
Yeah. And the people who work there are proficient Hawaiian language speakers.
Which you never find.
No. It's very, very rare, in fact, for there to be a Hawaiian language requirement for resorts in Hawaii.
I mean, I might be ignorant about this, but I remember the island of Niihau, where that's the one place I heard and always have been told that the language of Hawaiian is preserved and taught. I mean, as a requirement of being on that island.
Right. But there has been a considerable growth in Hawaiian language usage. Hawaii is undergoing a kind of cultural renaissance, and it continues to grow and it continues to expand, and it touches different parts of this island and its culture. And language is one of those aspects. There are more Hawaiian speakers today in Hawaii, many more, than there were when I was a child growing up here.
Exactly. So what's the Hawaiian word for we're out of time?
I don't know, but I think Hihilani will.
Well, when she comes on, she'll tell us. I can tell you one word that will tell you what we are right now.
Pow.
Thank you very much. That means we're done. Joe Rohde, the Senior Vice President and Creative Executive. Of course, the big title, of course, is that he's one of the huge, great Imagineers and generally and considerably responsible for this resort. Joe, thanks very much for joining us. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we've got a whole lot more coming from the island of Oahu and the Aulani Disney Hawaii Resort. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you're having a great time wherever you are, even though you're probably stuck with your demented aunt and your crazy uncle and you can't wait to go back home. Don't say I didn't warn you. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And where are we? Well, we're at 21 degrees, 28 minutes north, 157 degrees, 59 minutes west. Get out your maps, boys and girls. We're on the island of Oahu in the Aulani Disney Resort Hotel. Listen to this. 44 miles long, 30 miles wide, and 112 miles around, but we're in Kolina, which is about 20 miles away from downtown Honolulu and probably just about where you want to be if you don't want hustle and bustle and you want to just relax. This is the place to do it. Lots of stuff to talk about in the news, and this one came across my desk. You don't hear about Barbados very often. We've done the show there before. But when you talk about innovation and cutting edge, I'm sorry, Barbados doesn't usually cut it. But they get kudos from me on this one, and I wish more people would pay attention to what Barbados just did. And by the way, I include Hawaii in this as well. Barbados is now about to become the very first nation to have totally free Wi-Fi access everywhere, from the bus stop to the rum shops, anything. How cool is that? When will everybody else get the memo that charging for Wi-Fi is an impediment to everything? And if Barbados can do it, I'd like to hear Hawaii's excuse. If Barbados can do it, what's Miami's excuse? I mean, we can go on and on and on. The bottom line is, it's free, and it's starting now. It's the first nation, I'll say it again, with totally free Wi-Fi access. That in itself, I know this is crazy, but I'm a type A personality, so hear me out. That's a good reason to go to Barbados, because you get connected. The true definition of luxury travel is when you get to keep your options. And boy, that's an option I'd like to keep, free Wi-Fi. So congratulations, Barbados, and other nations. Watch what's going to happen. You're going to see the market shift. And no, it won't be filled out in a customer survey form or a guest satisfaction card. When people hear the entire country is Wi-Fi and it's free, people are going to go there just for that because they can't help themselves. Either people like me who go sleeping every night with their Blackberries. But the bottom line is it's a very cool thing. And it allows people to do what they deny that they do, right? We do not change our lifestyle when we change our location. I don't care what anybody says, we don't. This is an opportunity to at least call that into action. Anyway, that was my little song and dance on that, but congratulations to Barbados. My next guest, speaking of what things are worth and what things cost, knows a little bit about that. He's a contributor to Forbes.com, and he just wrote a story that's perfect for this segment called How to Haggle for Anything, including, I suppose, free Wi-Fi. His name, J.J. Kalau. Hey, J.J.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm okay. So that's pretty cool about free Wi-Fi for the whole country, huh?
It's very cool. Yeah, I'd like to be there this winter.
Well, now you have a reason to go. Why don't you email somebody and see if they get it in Barbados? Just kidding.
That's right.
So when people always ask me, well, you know, how do you get an upgrade? How do you get a discount? And I always say the best way to get an upgrade is never to ask for it. The best way to get an upgrade is to be nice. And because everybody ahead of you has asked for the upgrade has already been turned down. But you also have to make sure that you're dealing with the right person to begin with, right? You never want to take a no from somebody who's not empowered to give you a yes in the first place.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I'm glad you spoke about just being nice. You know, a lot of times when people think about negotiation, they think about taking a really hard line and being aggressive. I completely agree that you really just want to be likable is the most important fact. In my opinion, you know, if you're aggressive and you're a bit mean and you get what you want, to me, that's not quite a victory. You have this negative relationship now with that person, and it's
plus you set the groundwork for the person that you just beat up to beat somebody else up in retribution.
Exactly right, and you're spreading that. So I'm glad that you began with that, because I truly believe that is the most important point about getting what you want in this life, is just kind of being nice to people and being likable.
And there's one thing I'll throw into that, which my mother always made me do, and I never wanted to do it, but as I got older, I must admit that you realize that your mom is always right. Write your thank you notes.
That's a very good point, and I need to get better at that. But I agree that shows a degree of thoroughness and thoughtfulness that people really appreciate.
Yeah, it does. So what's, other than having a friendly disposition and being smiling and just being nice, how can you then haggle in a nice and friendly way?
Well, the most important point is to understand, you know, what's driving the other side. And that generally takes some knowledge of the situation. So if you are looking to get your website built for cheap, you need to understand how that works, you know, how that industry works. Same if you're on, you know, the floor of an electronics store, you need to understand what is driving the salespeople who you're dealing with. And in many cases, that's a commission. So, you know, they are incentivized to make the sale. They are not incentivized necessarily to keep that price on the label. They have other,
sure,
other things that are driving them.
There's something called value added. I mean, I remember I actually used my own advice one day. It never happens, but I got a chance to do it, where I had reserved a room in San Francisco at a hotel. I was going to rent a car, which I did, and got a rate. I negotiated a reasonably decent rate at a relatively expensive hotel. And then I just asked the question, hey guys, would you throw in free parking and would you throw in free internet?
Sure.
And they said, okay. It was only when I was checking out of the hotel, I found out they were charging $42 a night for parking. So for those 3 nights, I saved $126 just because I'd asked.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, you know, one of the people I interviewed for this article, his name is Ed Brodo. And he wrote a book called Negotiation Bootcamp. And one of the main points he makes in that is that people don't have what he calls a negotiation consciousness, which is really just a kind of a fancy way of saying you need to ask. You need to be prepared to just ask for things. Of course, do it, you know, nicely. But you just need to see what your options are. It rarely hurts, and it often helps, you know, as you found out.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Always great to haggle if you do it nicely, and then it won't be called haggling. How about that? J.J. Kalau from Forbes Online. Of course, you can read him at Forbes.com. J.J., thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Peter.
You got it. Coming up, a good pal of the show. He's not with us in Oahu today. He's calling in from one of the other islands because, well, he's the coolest doctor I know. He's Doc Maui. That's right. That's his name. No, it isn't. His name is Norm Esten. When he comes back, and when we come back, you'll find out why when Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns from the Aulani Resort, the Disney Resort in Oahu. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the island of Oahu and the Aulani Disney Hawaii Resort and Hotel. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as I do each week at this time on the show, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that essential and hard work in Haiti. in Japan, in Western China, in Chile, and in Christchurch, New Zealand, all those areas victims of either earthquakes and or tsunamis in almost the last 2 years. And in particular, the rebuilding efforts in Haiti will take at least another 8 years, at least another generation. They need your help. They may not be on the front page of every other news magazine or news organization, but they're still on our front page, which you can find by going to our website. And what you'll find out about that list, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by all the different ways you can actually bring something to the party. Based on what you are, a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, a teacher, a lawyer, it doesn't matter. You have skills that can be helped, that can be helpful, I should say, in those regions in ways you don't normally imagine them to be helpful. So check it out, petergreenberg.com, for that list. Speaking of being helped, my next guest has always helped me. A couple of years ago, I was over in Maui, and he was actually working then not only as the doctor in Maui, but he was also our chief medical officer for the Olympics for NBC. And he said, I'm going to give you a present. And what he gave me was a little box of Altoids, but there were no Altoids in the box. There was every kind of emergency medicine I might need to take in my travels around the world. He labeled them as to when I needed them, when I could use them. I closed the box. I thanked him. I put it in my briefcase and never opened the box until about a year and a half ago. I was in New Orleans for CBS. We were about to do a show for the early show at the New Orleans Zoo. I was in intense pain, so much pain I couldn't even stand up. It was late at night. We were getting up early in the morning to do the show, and I went to the Altoids box, and there was one of the pills that the doctor gave me, and that got me through the show, and it got me into an emergency room, at least so I could stand, and it was kidney stones. And for anybody listening to the show, women know what it's like to give birth. Men, it's what it's like to give birth. That's kidney stones. It's about as painful as you can get. So I'm I'm always in his debt. And that, of course, is Dr. Norm Esten, otherwise known as Doc Maui. Hello, Doctor.
Hello. Ha, Peter. Great to hear your voice.
Yeah, so that brings up the question, Doctor, as to what people should pack as a preventative situation in their own medical kits every time they travel.
Great question. Most people take too much, as usual, with luggage, clothing, everything. So you want to pack light. You can probably get everything you need in a small little Ziploc or my favorite travel container, a small Altoids can. You should be able to pack.